and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It's Friday, February 3rd, 2017. Finally got that right. 2 weeks into the nightmare known as Trumplandia. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And I guess we got some stuff to talk about.
Okay.
where do you want to start? You want to start with tonight's semi-good news?
Sure.
A federal judge in Washington has issued a restraining order. I like the way they put that because I think of like a domestic abuser.
Yeah, well, that's what he is.
Well, yeah, I guess that's pretty accurate. So there's a restraining order. Donald Trump is not allowed to come within 500 miles of the country.
Wouldn't that be nice?
No, it's a restraining order against his executive orders, basically suspending all the visas from all the countries he listed as that he doesn't like or that he says harbor terrorists.
It's like seven predominantly Muslim countries, by the way, none of which have ever had...
Well, that's what the judge brought up.
...terrorist attack on U.S. soil, like a citizen of that country that has come into this country has never killed a single human.
Sure. So the Trump administration's lawyer, the judge asked, a Bush appointee, by the way, George W. Bush appointee, asked, well, okay, you issued this executive order citing that you need to halt, in the name of national security, you needed to halt visas or halt the entrance of people with visas from these countries. Can you cite, you know, the instances that you're talking about?
Right.
And they couldn't name any. So
yeah, that's because there aren't any.
Because there aren't any.
No. It's not like they didn't have their homework prepared. There just aren't any to fucking cite. So.
No. The one you could cite would be Saudi Arabia, and we're not about to stop issuing visas or reject people from Saudi Arabia.
No. Of course not. So I guess we should talk about prior to that judge's order, and we don't know what the impact of that order is going to be. In a normal world where we have a republic, when a federal judge blocks an executive order or declares something unconstitutional, there's an injunction. And the department or departments that would typically have enforced that executive order don't do that.
Right. But now, as we know, in the past few weeks, that those waters have been a bit muddied.
Yes.
Because the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, technically answers to the Justice Department, I want to say.
It's its own department. It's its own cabinet.
And it's under the executive.
It is.
So
it is. However, it is of the enforcement branch. Right. So the way checks and balances work, folks, is
the way they're supposed to work, at least.
So the legislative branch makes a law. It's just basics here.
The executive branch signs off on it.
The executive branch decides how to enforce that law, and the judicial branch judges that law,
whether it's constitutional
or not. So legislation is typically very vague. It's like, we're going to do this thing. Like, we're going to make it so that, you know, we're going to have clean water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you give it to the executive branch. It's their job to enforce that law. And that's why we have all these departments under the executive branch. They go in and they give that clean water law to the EPA. And the EPA is full of a bunch of the nasty word bureaucrats, right?
Mm-hmm.
But these are professionals in the field of environmental protection, and they would know what clean water means. Just saying clean water is like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
How clean? What are we cleaning it from? How are we going to get that accomplished? That's the executive branch's job. Now, the judicial branch's job is to say either the enforcement of that is unconstitutional or the law itself is unconstitutional.
Right.
What we're having right now is the executive branch has been told that this executive action, which is not legislation, is executive action, which Barack Obama was a terrorist for doing
for a pariah for doing it, right?
They're being told by the judicial branch that this is unconstitutional, and the individuals working inside of the Department of Homeland Security are enforcing the executive action against court order. That's what happened last Saturday when the Muslim ban was enacted. There were massive protests at airports and all over the country and really all over the world. American citizens or people with green cards who were flying back from countries were stopped at airports and detained for long periods of time. Families were separated. It was a goddamn shit show.
Well, yeah, and let me just self-plug here for a second. I wrote back in the summer an article when this was being bandied about. Nobody thought Trump was going to win. Back then, they didn't even think he was going to win the nomination, let alone the presidency.
Right.
And I wrote about, okay, if Trump's Muslim ban came to fruition, this is what would happen. And I described basically all the chaos of last weekend.
Right.
And all the diplomatic crises and all the shit show that's happened. And fortunately, I was right.
Yes.
I was exactly right.
Well, of course. It's an... I mean... He's doing exactly what he said he was going to do.
Do we want to get into the
fact at which he is doing it and the power with which the Republican Party that they yield and are willing to use is staggering. And I think for me, we're going to talk about a lot of the stuff that's happened just this week, because again, we could do a 5-hour podcast per week, but what is so staggering is we talk about usually a president's first 100 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that always sort of, to me, seemed kind of quaint back in the day, like as if he can get much done in 100 days, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be his promise of like, these are my priorities and these are the things I'm going to try to get accomplished in 100 days.
Right.
Trump's been in for like, what is
2 weeks.
2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, 14 days... He has rammed through a lot of what he said he was going to do. Not by the way that government works, not by actually going through the process I just described.
Mm-hmm.
Just fuck it, executive order, this branch start doing this branch start doing that.
And we could mention that Congress could step in theory, to stop any of this.
Executive orders only matter. Like, I hereby proclaim as King Cheeto that Congress shall pass a law XYZ has no teeth.
Mm-hmm.
He can't mandate to Congress the laws they pass. There's a separation, checks and balances, right? So a couple of those happened and people were all up in arms. And it's like, well, that's not a law. Like, that's saying Congress has to pass this law, which he has no authority to say. Unfortunately, when that starts to matter is when enforcement agencies start treating those executive orders as if Congress passed a law. If we start treating his executive orders as though they are the rule of law, they become the rule of law.
And that's what they've been doing, and that's where we're...
Yes.
A lot of historians and people who know are stopping and saying, wait a minute, are we in a dictatorship now?
Because have been saying that,
that's
too.
That's how it looks. Rachel's have been... Well, I count you among those.
Yeah.
Like, you are an historian and a pundit, but...
I'm really, I'm sort of past issue-based politics right now.
Yeah.
I'm very much focused on the future of the republic and whether or not we remain a representative democracy with a rule of law and a constitution. Some of the stuff he's been doing, and again, we're talking 14 days. This is not over the last 3 years and it's election again. This is 14 days of him being in power. We are starting to see constitutional crises come up and be very soon likely to be something that could dismantle our representative democracy. So this isn't about Trump's a pussy grabber and Mike Pence hates me. This is about... the literal institutions that make our government function are under attack, and we're stepping on the precipice, I think, of being not governed, but dictated, and I think rightly so, we're likely to soon become called a regime, and that would be fair. I think this man thinks he's above the law. I think he thinks anything the Constitution says that disagrees with him just doesn't matter. And
Congress is going along with it for the time being in the hope that he will sign off on their awful, horrible bills that they pass
yes.
when they get around to that.
Like, they know that he's completely unraveling mentally and psychologically. And so they don't care, right? What they care about is, as long as they present it in the right fashion, he'll pretty much sign anything they put in front of him. So just put shit in front of him that you've been wanting to pass for the last, you know,
8 years.
8 years, or really 20 years in some cases. And he'll sign it. And there's no opposition. I mean, there's opposition, but not enough that it matters. So what I would say is this, kids. I never in my life thought that I would say, I'll take Mike Pence. Mike Pence and I are the most opposite people on issues that any two people could be. He's screaming about baby murder, and I'm talking about abortion as like a public health initiative. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a good thing for public health. He's talking about electrocuting gay kids, and I'm championing the rights of, like, just doing away with gender norms. Like,
right.
He and I couldn't be more polar opposite. But I feel like I can fight Mike Pence on the issues. He's not going to dismantle the country and the Constitution and the government. It'll go, we'll take some steps backward domestically, certainly. And I'll fight for the things I believe in, and I'll fight him on the issues. But, and it'll suck. And I'm not going to say that there's not going to be damage done. But for me, the damage that is possible for Trump, if after 14 days we're here, I will take Mike Pence every day over Donald Trump at this point. Donald Trump is dangerous to the country, and not because he disagrees with me. He's dangerous because he's mentally unstable, unfit for the job, temperamentally unstable. It's we're not safe right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I haven't even been just thinking about his cabinet picks. I know that Tillerson got confirmed.
Yep.
DeVos may be in question or doubt,
yeah.
And that's been delayed a little bit now.
Yeah, we need three. Well, people keep saying we need three Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. We need four. Because if we have three, it's a tie.
It's a tiebreaker, and it goes
to
Pence.
And then Pence is the tiebreaker, so it goes to her. So we need four Republicans. We currently have two that are not going to vote for DeVos. Every Democrat's voting against her.
Mm-hmm.
We have two Republicans that are going to vote against her. If we could get two more, we could block her pick as Secretary of Education, which would be tremendous because she's a fucking nightmare on education.
Manchin is one. No, he's a Democrat. I keep thinking he's a Republican. Who are the two Republicans? Is it Collins and...
I don't know. I have to look it up.
Yeah,
I
don't know either.
It's
like I said, like the cabinet picks, we were really, really worried about that. Now that seems so secondary.
Yeah, I mean,
to the other chaos that's going on.
Right. Like, it is absolutely nightmarish.
I mean, it's asinine that Ben Carson is going to lead HUD, of course. And
it's going to ruin people's lives, and people are going to starve and be homeless, and it's going to be horrible. We can fight that. There may not be a HUD anymore if Donald Trump's president for another 2 weeks. Like, there may not be cabinets at all. He's he doesn't know how to hear the word no, and so he just fires people and ends things, and the Republicans, you know, decided to fuck the rules and just go forward with things without the Democrats there. Like, it's we're at this point, really, I think, on this precipice, like I said, of like the rule of law does not matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna do what we want to do. And I don't care if it's not legal. I don't care if it's not constitutional. I don't care if it's not part of the rules of order. I don't care. We're going to do what we want to do, and we're going to get it done, and we're going to get it done quickly, because I think the Republicans realize that this is a house of cards, that this is going to collapse pretty quickly. So they want to get as much shit done as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And Trump is just a completely unhinged, psychopathic narcissist who's like just running around you know, burning everything down. So,
at the whim of Steve Bannon.
Yes, the white supremacist. So, misogynist.
So does Bernie, is Bernie Sanders still talking about working with Trump because something, something trade?
Yeah.
I thought, oh, is he still? Because I know like a week and a half ago he
was. He's going to do a debate on CNN with some douchebag Republican. Because Bernie Sanders is literally still in election mode. Let's not.
Well, so is Trump. So that's perfect.
The fucking, like, they're doing a debate on healthcare. Bernie Sanders and some douchebag Republican are going to do a debate on healthcare on CNN. Fuck that guy. Like, it's just about his ego and his one issue. Like, he's not trying to resist the Trump administration. He's not. He's not trying to save the Republic. He's trying to prove his economic point because that's what made him so popular amongst those kids. Mm-hmm. It's obnoxious. It's not helpful. I don't need a debate with Bernie Sanders on healthcare. I don't know how that helps. I don't know how that helps. I don't. Like.
Yeah, he needs to be doing sit-ins and revolts on the floor.
Yeah, where's this fiery guy? Where's this fiery resistance? He's not. He cares about one thing. He's blind to everything else. And his ego got away from him in the campaign. And he's just a completely different person now. I don't know. It's like, okay.
It's a little sad.
Cool. Do your debate on CNN. That sounds great. That'll help me do nothing other than... Isn't Bernie right about this one central issue? How about anything else that's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Anything. No. Healthcare, healthcare, healthcare. Socialized healthcare.
I thought it was trade. I thought it was...
Yeah, that too. I mean, it's a stump speech. He's going to go on CNN and give the same fucking stump speech he gave during the election. Cool. Okay. There's like a literal coup happening to our democracy, but yeah, go give your stump speech again. That'll really help. Thanks. I don't know. I can't. Elizabeth Warren's been kind of disappointing.
Well, all the Democrats are coming around because people are doing what we told them to do 2 weeks ago.
They are,
which is very encouraging. And I'm not going to assume that we're wholly responsible. if 10 of our listeners are, that's amazing. But people are calling. Every staffer in Washington says the phones are ringing off the hook.
Yes.
And, you know, it's become clear. And I think we talked about this last week, but the thought was, well, we can't be obstructionists like the Republicans were because that'll show everybody how much better we are.
Because we're going to take the moral high ground. It's like, shut the fuck up and resist already.
Yeah, well, that's literally all... Yeah. Of the constituents are calling them and saying.
Yeah.
And saying, you better do this or I'm going to primary your ass.
Yeah. No, and I'm not kidding. I'm not fucking around.
Yeah.
No.
It's our own version of the Tea Party insurrection.
Yeah. Only we're not just angry about a black guy. We have a literal fascist in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we get to be a little bit angry. Justifiably, I think. An interesting story about that. So in Colorado, we made national news because of our garbage person, Senator Cory Gardner, saved in my phone as literally Cory fucking Gardner, who I call every day. I like to call him in the morning around like 8:30 and just bitch about whatever I'm feeling bitchy about that day. Whatever I scrolled through my news feed and was like, ah, fuck this guy. So I call him every day. Most of the time I get through. To like a Chad or a Jim. First of all, can I just say, he is rolling through the people that answer the phone. Either there's multiple of them or they just are quitting. Like fucking.
Well,
like,
aren't they interns and they each put in like 6 hours a week?
But I do not talk to the same person every day. I'll talk to the same person like 4 days in a row. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, this is Chad. And I'm like, what happened to Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, because you know you get to know Jeff for 4 or 5 days, and then you're like, "Hey, Jeff, it's Rachel. I really need you to let Cory Gardner know that like I'm really pissed about this."
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah, Lakewood, right? Uh huh. Okay. And then you know, Chad answers and you're like, wow, Jeff knew me, man. Welcome to Jeff.
I got to start my whole spiel over again.
Yeah. Well, it's good because then he like is definitely going to write down like, oh my God, a constituent from Lakewood called. This is serious. I feel like Jeff gets tired of me after 3 or 4 days.
Sure.
So Cory Gardner made national news because he's been getting so many phone calls, and it's not just phone calls. So
he's in a purple state. He's not in Alabama.
No, and it's not just phone calls. I work across the street. I work in downtown Denver, and across the street from me, he has an office that must have been some kind of business office or something.
Right.
And there are regular protests outside my office across the street for Cory Gardner. Like, not a ton of people. We're not talking thousands, but we're talking 10, 20, 30, 40 people almost every day protesting whether he should be against the Muslim ban or vote against Betsy DeVos or vote against Jeff Sessions.
He's not going to vote against any of this, by the way. Well, he's going to toe the line.
It's interesting because his first tactic, last week we talked about this, his first tactic was to avoid them.
Right.
Take the back stairs, turn the phones off, don't turn the voicemail on, and don't respond to emails. That got national news. So then he was like, fine. So Jeff Chad answers the phone, and he was able to meet with a few protesters. And so now he came out, and the national news picked it up, that his office is been deluged with phone calls and protesters is that we're all paid.
Yeah.
He saw an ad on Craigslist, and some of these numbers are not 303 or 720 area codes. There's some of them. He goes,
mine isn't.
I know. And you are a constituent of
Yana's isn't.
You know how many people have moved to Denver since pot legalized?
I don't think Molly's is either.
I don't know. Molly's, I think, is. But you know how many people moved to Denver since pot was legalized? I mean, yeah. I don't know if that's the entire reason, but
several
million people have moved here. Probably most of them didn't change their fucking phone number because no one cares.
Florida,
and he's like,
Kansas.
It's all California and New York people, just blue states. And I'm like, motherfucker, you live in a blue state. You govern a blue state.
Mm-hmm.
Nah. So the Huffington Post picked it up. It was on their front page today. That he's claiming there isn't any like actual resistance in Colorado. We're all just paid protesters.
Mm-hmm.
So now people are calling his office to give him like their address and their like when they moved and like their voter registration and stuff because they're like, no, we're proving that we're not.
Mm-hmm.
I highly doubt that it'll make any difference. He is a sycophant and a piece of shit.
He's going to vote right down the line for every cabinet appointee.
Yeah, he's going to vote.
He's going to go
whatever.
Along with the ban.
Yeah.
Should we talk about for a minute how all of a sudden, when it's politically convenient, they don't want to call it a Muslim ban?
Right.
Like the second after Rudy Giuliani is literally on CNN calling it a Muslim ban.
Right. So, I don't. Full disclosure to all of you lovely people listening. I have, my job has shifted a little bit and I have been incredibly busy this week and we've also had just a lot of stuff going on. So, I'm also doing some self-care. So I'm not super caught up on the news. Like I see stuff that comes up, but yeah, what are we calling it now? Like I don't know the full story on this one.
The full story is they don't want to call it a Muslim ban when that term becomes controversial or when they know it's going to court.
So what are we calling
it? And it's blatantly unconstitutional to have a religious-based ban.
Obviously. So what are they? What is it then?
It is a ban on certain nationals for the purposes of national security, and that fell apart today in front of a judge.
But they were also not allowing people into the country last weekend that had green cards, like yes. That are lawful, naturalized citizens of the country.
They didn't let the former prime minister of Norway
right
in for a minute.
Right. Yeah, that happened today, right? Or yesterday?
It was very recent. Yeah.
The former prime minister of Norway tried to enter the United States and they detained him because he had previously traveled to Iran in the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, why'd you go there? And he was like, I was the prime minister of Norway. And they were like, well, I don't know about that. And he's like, literally, like I was a foreign what? And they held him for, I think it was only for like only for 3 hours. Lol. But yeah, I mean, he came out and made a statement and just said like,
this is bullshit.
I can't, I can't really process that this hike happened in the U.S. And I can't imagine what's going to happen to other foreign leaders and how this is going to affect,
like, which is another thing I wrote in the article.
What's that?
Another thing I wrote in the article about how this can affect foreign leaders. Yeah. And then I kind of stopped myself in the middle of the article and said, this is so ridiculous.
It's
It'll
so
obviously
crazy.
Never happen.
Obviously. Oh, no, it did. Good, because we're living in the upside down. So
I mean, are any conservatives out there embarrassed by any of this yet? Or is this what they wanted? Do they want the prime minister of Norway to get sort of interrogated
because
he's a terrorist? Or
they don't care. They want... Most of the conservatives go, I think, fall in either one of two categories, and some of them in both. Most of them, like your Rick Santorums, your Mike Huckabees.
Oh, I mean your average, quote, conservative voter.
Oh.
Conservative person. Our dads. Do they see that and shrug?
So, you know my friend at work, right? Mm-hmm. So... We were having this conversation not today, but yesterday. We were talking about the shooting that happened.
Yes.
Right.
On 16th Street.
On 16th Street Mall, which is literally where I work, at Union Station. This man shot an RTD, which is the like public transit system we have here, shot an RTD driver in the neck. In front of a bunch of people, and he died, and it was really, really sad.
He was a white guy
horrible.
From Texas.
Now, let me back up, though. Mm-hmm. It came out that he was a radicalized Islamist.
Yes, he's a radicalized Islamist.
And everyone
Islamist
was like,
that,
see?
No,
see?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
what we found out when people stopped spouting fucking shit was, yes, he was a radicalized, converted Islamist white dude from Texas who was an American citizen.
That's not even the biggest part of the story. The biggest part of the story is he was coming to this mosque.
Yes.
And the leaders of this mosque said, this guy's becoming radicalized.
That's right.
You need to check him out.
This happened twice. When he was in Texas, he was reported by the mosque there. And on Christmas Day, the Denver mosque that he had been attending reported him to the Department of Homeland Security and said, this person is being radicalized. You need to check him out. Mm-hmm. He was put on a watch list. To the knowledge of the news organizations in Denver, and from what I could find from Texas, this man was never interviewed by any law enforcement officials.
No, it's a white
federal
dude.
Or
it's a white
state.
Dude from Texas.
Nobody did anything.
And I'm sure he bought his gun legally, too.
So, anyway, I'm talking to my friend, and she... I didn't know any of this yet. Like, you sent me the article about 10 minutes after we'd finished our conversation about this. Mm-hmm. And here's what she had to say. She said, you know, think about that shooting. And I really don't think this immigration thing would be such a big deal if we were certain that everyone would report when someone had been radicalized. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, when he was in Texas, the Texas mosque... reported him to law enforcement. They reported him to the FBI. And she said, but then he was in Denver and no one reported him. And I was like, okay. Interesting. And I didn't know anything about him. And I said, but I want you to think about something else that happened this week. And she's like, what? And I said, there was a white Christian man who went into a mosque and shot 6 Muslim people and killed them.
In Quebec, right?
And she was like, what? And I was like, yeah. So she starts Googling it, right? And then she turns to me 10 minutes later. This wasn't in America? I said, no, it was in Canada. So she's reading that, and she's a very thoughtful person. And she comes back and she said, it's just disgusting. Just terrible. I said, yeah, I know. And she's like, it's just a complete perversion of Christianity. And I said, I know. I said, you know what I always say? Islamic extremists are to Islam as the KKK is to Christianity. And that comes straight from the West Wing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, oh my God, that's exactly right. Like, she was super excited about it. She was like, that's exactly right. Like, people in the KKK are not Christians and they pervert our religion and da 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 da. So we had that whole conversation. And then you sent me the article from the Denver Post about who this guy actually was and what
right.
he looked like and
right.
that he was reported by the Denver Mosque. So mm-hmm. I sent that to her. And then she was just sort of quiet and said, like, I don't know how we solve this. And what I guess I'm not sure about is this. So this guy gets reported in Texas, moves to Denver, gets reported in Denver. Texas and Denver don't talk, right? Like, it's not like Texas told Colorado, hey, there's not like a national registry of people who have been reported for being radicalized. It's all state by state, because that's how, I'm telling you, that's how law enforcement works.
Yeah.
My question is this, from a legal standpoint and from a, from a legal standpoint, what should we do? We can't arrest somebody for having asshole views or shit. Half the country would be in jail if it was up to me. We can't arrest people for talking about doing something bad or suggesting that.
Well, making terroristic threats are illegal.
He didn't make a threat.
No.
He said, you know, these people are bad and, like, you know, whatever. We can't be the thought police.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't arrest people for having shitty points of view. The First Amendment protects you from everything other than speech that could potentially incite violence.
And the Second Amendment ensures that everybody who wants a gun will have a gun.
Yeah. So what are we to do with these people? We throw our hands up in the air and we say, oh my God, it's so awful. We knew. Why didn't we do something? That's a great question, but I think we should think about it in a deeper way and say, do what?
Well,
we're a nation of laws. What do we do? I mean, I guess for me, I'd like to have seen some law enforcement official at some level have a fucking conversation with this guy, interview him, put the fear of God into him. Hey, we're watching you. Hey, we understand that you've been radicalized. Like, this is your whatever. Does that help? Does that exacerbate things? I don't know. But other than have a conversation with this guy, what is it that we're supposed to do as a government that is a, you know, democratic republic, that's not Putin's Russia where you just arrest people for having viewpoints you disagree with?
Well, you know, we could be on the way to that.
I'm serious about this question. What do we do with this guy? What was the right thing to do that we didn't do?
I don't know that anything was done that was wrong. This was a guy that was more unhinged and more radicalized than either the powers that be or the security apparatus could determine.
Even if they thought
he was... I mean, we don't know the whole depth of it. We don't know if he was under surveillance. We don't know if somebody just dropped the ball. We don't know if they looked this guy up, saw he was a white guy and an army veteran, and said, oh, right, the hell with it. We're not worried about him.
But what should they have done, in your estimation?
I don't know what the evidence is.
I don't know either.
How that conversation went when the leaders of the Texas mosque or the Denver mosque called and said, we're worried about this guy.
They sent an email and just never got a response.
Right. And I don't know what was in that email. There's too many unknown variables for me to say. But assuming they said, we're worried about this guy, he's becoming radicalized, you should take a look.
No, the email was published in the article, and it said basically, like, we are concerned, we had a community meeting, this is exactly what he said, it's concerning, we're afraid he's radicalized, please do something. What happened to the email after that is unknown. What happened, the mosque reports getting no response. There's no record of him. I mean, so I don't know. I don't know the answer either. Like, I'm of two minds about this. I think in an age where, you know, we are having to deal with radicalized people of both Christian and Muslim faith, that there needs to, I guess my answer would be, like, there needs to be a clear answer to that question. We need to, it needs to be transparent. Everyone needs to know what the answer is. Everyone needs to know, first of all, who to contact, when they contact that person, what's going to happen, what the chain of command is, sort of chain of custody, like, what are we going to do when we get those tips? I think everyone needs to know that. And I think it needs to be clear, not just state by state, but on a national level, like, okay, if you hear you report it to this agency, this agency, like, let's say they kick it down to the local law enforcement agency because they're in the same city and they have jurisdiction, they can go, but they're required to go have a conversation with this guy. And if the people on the scene determine, yeah, he's probably been radicalized, maybe we should call in, you know, whoever it would be in the federal government that specializes in these things, probably someone from the FBI, particularly if it's an American citizen. And then the FBI takes over and, you know, starts an investigation, or maybe there's surveillance. I don't know, but doing nothing is not okay with me. And arresting people for having bad points of view is not okay with me.
I don't know that there's a I don't know that there is a middle ground, and I don't know that there's a right answer. And
I don't either.
And I think in a country with 300 million people and 350 million guns, or which or however the number is,
yeah,
that ultimately there are going to be acts of violence that there are just there's just no preventing. And I want to kind of branch off this and go into if you try to let's take the Trump Muslim ban. Muslim countries ban thing at face value in a vacuum for a second and try to unwrap the logic of it, okay?
Okay.
So let's talk about terrorism in the United States. The last major terrorist attack perpetrated by foreigners was on September 11th. Those were all Saudi nationals.
Well, I would argue that Pulse in Orlando.
Hold on a second.
Okay.
The Pulse shooter is an American citizen.
I'm going to have to look that up.
As was the San Bernardino shooter.
I thought the Pulse shooter was...
He was the son...
Not naturalized.
He was the son of Syrian immigrants. But as far as I know, he was born in the United States. Now, I could be wrong about that. Maybe I'm misremembering. I know for sure the San Bernardino shooter, I think, was from Queens. Born in Queens, United States citizen. The last major terrorist attack... That was carried out by foreign nationals.
Yeah,
was September 11th, all by Saudi foreign nationals, not a country on this visa block list. So, I think the media is doing a god awful job of explaining that.
Yes,
they're not even getting into that.
Yeah,
they're just reporting at face value what Trump is saying, that this is about national security, keeping people safe, and keeping his campaign promises of tougher immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, where is the logic?
Racism?
Well, yes. Yeah, obviously.
Islamophobia, xenophobia? I mean, there's...
So what are you being kept safe from? And he's especially singled out Syria, which is a little weird to me. And I don't know
why he did that, and it's because he's a dum-dum.
Well, yeah.
So Syria is a country that's in great unrest right now. And ISIS has a stronghold in that country. And so to Dum Dum, Cheeto fascist, he goes, ISIS is in Syria. We can't let them come here. And you're like, okay, the ISIS fighters in Syria have no interest in coming to the United States. They're literally soldiers in giant
trying to hold on to the area that they've claimed.
The refugees from Syria are people who are being hurt by ISIS and by their own
and
government.
By Assad and by the Russians. Yeah.
So
you name it.
Those are the people that we should most be helping. Mm-hmm. I think it's easy
to keep
for
them
him
from being radicalized or taken in or.
Oh, they killed my entire family. And then this nice man came along with a sandwich and a glass of water and a gun and I became radicalized. I mean, God. I also think it's easy for him to explain it that way because, again, most people don't know that much about what's going on over there.
No,
so
absolutely not. They couldn't point it to on a map.
They say ISIS is there and it's war. Why would we let them come here?
Right.
And you're like, no. Yes, it's very bad over there. That's why we should let the people who are being slaughtered and their families blown up out of that country and into ours.
Yeah.
But that's more nuanced than anybody wants to talk about.
Certainly than our president wants to talk
certainly
about.
Certainly than our president.
And certainly that most of his supporters want to talk about.
Yeah. Or understand or wrap their head around. So.
Yeah, his biggest hard-on is for Syria.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. And I think it's also wanting to reverse the Obama administration's attempt to bring in more of the Syrian refugees because of the very things that you talked about.
Right.
The fact that these are people that are fleeing ISIS.
Yes. And the Russians. Mm-hmm. And their own government.
So it's not only a humanitarian, there's not only humanitarian ends to this, there are political, geopolitical ends to this. There's American prestige ends to this. There's national security ends to doing this. And Trump is doing the exact opposite of what we need to do in this situation.
Russia is blackmailing Donald Trump, and so, you know, they turn the tapes off.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just been an absolute shit show. Some of the, I don't know if there's any bright spot to it, other than today that there was a restraining order. Some Democratic leaders on the issue locally would be Daphna Michelson-Cheney, State House Rep of HD30.
What has she said?
She gave a very impassioned speech after what's his name? Read the text of this bill that she co-sponsored to essentially, like, as the State House, they can't do much about the nationwide ban, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it was essentially a bill that was like, this is bullshit and we're not going to stand for it.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave this impassioned speech on the floor about...
When was this?
A couple days ago.
Oh, great.
About her distant relatives who fled the Holocaust and mm-hmm. were able to come to the U.S. and their experience. And comparing that to the experience of these refugees and how... You know, certainly she wouldn't be here today and none of her family would be here today because they would have all have died.
Right.
But it was beautiful and she's an excellent speaker and I'm proud to have worked for her and I'm glad that she's doing the work that she's doing. She's doing actually quite a few things that I'm very happy about and proud of.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm glad to hear that, you know.
Yeah, she's gonna do great at governing, I think. The other thing was, Cory Booker, who, you know, I'm just infatuated with, I think he's just the best, 2020, went to the Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C. the mm-hmm. night of the protests and gave this really impassioned speech about immigrants and refugees and, American values that, I mean, he's just like in like his windbreaker and jeans, just like yelling. And it was just like, you know, he's a man of the people, I think. So there are some people in our party that are resisting and that are really putting their necks on the line on every issue. And we need to recognize those people and we need to shame every fucking everybody else. Every one of them.
Yeah.
If you're not going to resist or you're not going to fight for me, I'll find someone who can. Period. End of discussion.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and that will take us to a short break. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back, and we'll talk about some of Trump's latest tweeting adventures and some other things. We are back, so don't go anywhere.
Than an awesome possum. Dip my body in chocolate frosting. 3 years later, I shot the frosting. Smelling like a blossom. Everything is awesome. Stepped in mud, got new brown shoes. Awesome to win, and it's awesome to lose. Awesome to lose. Awesome to lose.
Everything is better when.
Hello and welcome back to River Testimony here on Friday, February 3rd. And what did you want to get into here in the second half?
Well, I don't even know. I guess we should talk about what happened today with the Dodd-Frank thing, yeah?
Well, yes.
Talk about
that. So, he wants to roll back Dodd-Frank.
Oh, he did, by executive order, today. Signed a thing.
Yeah, but that, see, unlike the other things, I think that probably means less until Congress passes something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
But they will. And again, I think this is one of the things where it might be a bridge too far and you actually might have Republican constituents pissed off now.
Yes.
I know for sure.
For two reasons. One, my mom works in the mortgage industry, has my whole life. And she worked in the mortgage industry before 2008 happened.
Right.
And she's not... I don't know what you'd call it. She's sort of a support staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
For mortgage people.
Right.
She could do a lot of other stuff, but she doesn't want to be on commission. She did that for a while and
yeah,
it's just
yeah,
too
it's right? rough.
So anyway, she knows everything there is to know. And before 2008 happened, she kind of was like, there's some shady stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the crash and after the ensuing regulations happened, she has two things to say. One is her job is harder now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bigger pain in the ass for her.
Sure.
At work. Number two is that's okay. She's like, and my mom voted for Trump. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not a regulation person. But right. She was like, while my job may be harder, and it's a bigger pain in the ass for me to go through all of this bureaucratic red tape, if we are unregulated, we will do some bullfuckery, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, my mom would never say bullfuckery, but like...
another bubble and a crash.
Or some other version of it. I mean, she openly admits that, like, you know, in banking and in lending and all that kind of stuff, big money... greed is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter about the little guy. It doesn't matter about the country or the economy or anything else. It matters to the rich guy making more and more money, how much more money he can make. And so she's like, if we don't have rules, we will run amok.
Let's back up a little bit and talk about what Dodd-Frank does, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the main things is it makes it demands that banks have enough capital to back up their investments, basically. So if all their investments go bad, they're not going to go under and need a government bailout.
Right.
That's one thing.
Yes.
Maybe some of the other things you could explain a little better.
All I know is that I don't know all the details of the bill, and I should have done some research, but fuck, this week was hard. I know that as it pertains to mortgages,
mm-hmm.
There are regulations on...
I think there's regulations
you have
on...
to have... Like, you cannot give someone a more... So part of what precipitated the crash of 2008 was people giving loans to people without proof of income,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy.
Yeah.
I'm going to sell you a $400,000 house and I'm not going to check if you have a job or how much money you make.
No. You have a social security number and a policy. You get a mortgage. Yeah.
Yes. And it'll be a high interest rate, which makes your mortgage payment even higher, which you couldn't afford in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to explain any of it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's adjustable rate mortgage.
Right.
So,
but don't worry about it. Cause you know,
don't worry about it. You want to buy a house. You're tired of renting, right?
Yeah.
Look at this beautiful house. It can be yours.
And why were they doing that? Because they were packaging them up into mortgage-backed securities
yes.
and selling them. And the people who yeah. got the signatures were getting a cut, and the middle managers were getting a cut.
And then they were shorting
them. And they were shorting them. And the
saying,
CEOs
obviously,
the
these
cuts.
Things are going to fail, so we're going to bet that they do.
Well, that wasn't even until the very end when
they said it was going
to fail. They thought the bubble was just going to keep expanding forever and ever and ever, and prices were going to be... your medium home price was going to be $2 million. You know? I mean, they just, it was nonsense, but right. that's what was
but
happening.
The commissions people were making, I mean, selling a house and the commissions you make on that, and the fees.
Yeah,
and all
we're
the things,
not,
I mean,
we're not going to rehash the entire
but,
housing
so anyway,
bubble and
but
crash.
But stuff,
Dodd-Frank was put in to keep this from happening again.
Right, to say, okay, all that bullfuckery y'all did that crashed the housing market, mm-hmm. thus crashing the U.S. economy, you can't do that anymore. In addition to that, you got to fill out some paperwork. There's going to be some transparency. We're going to be looking at your stuff. Like, we're going to be regulating this.
Yeah, it's going to be tighter.
That's now. Just this one tiny part of Dodd-Frank, though. Dodd-Frank yeah. covers all kinds of stuff that has to do with Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
So today, Donald Trump was like, let's just get rid of it. I'm like, fuck it. We don't
yeah,
need it.
Yeah, and the part that killed me was his rationale was not... He didn't even try. I mean, maybe later in an official press release, there was some of that, but his rationale was not, well, this is going to be great for prospective homeowners and working people. He said, my friends, my people, my real estate people,
yeah.
it's harder for them to get credit because of this now. And there's stricter rules on them now, mm-hmm. so I don't like it, so we're going to get rid of it.
Right, and something, press release later, trickle down, it'll
yeah,
help
yes, it'll
you.
Be great for everybody, yeah.
It's not great for everybody.
And I think a lot of your average Americans know this, and even your average conservative Trump voters are not going to be too happy about this.
Right.
And I would hope.
That's my second point, was my friend at work. After lunch, we were sitting around, and I was... crazy busy, and she was like, we sit right next to each other, and she was like, Donald Trump has some stuff to answer for. And I was like, what?
What about, let's step aside from her for a second, because yeah. I think she's pretty open-minded, and she's not really that ideologically conservative across the board. What about your parents? What are your parents going to think of this?
I don't know. They just called me like 2 seconds ago.
I doubt it was to say, man, that Dodd-Frank rollback was some bullshit, huh?
So they've been drinking the Kool-Aid for a while on the Republican resistance to Dodd-Frank and how terrible it is. Uh-huh. Like, my mom understands the need for regulation of the mortgage industry because she's in it.
Right.
But because it says Dodd and Frank, it must be terrible.
Right. Because Barney Frank's name is on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I think they'll be overjoyed because okay. they don't really know what that means.
No, your mom does, though.
Yeah, she knows the part of her business. Does. Yes. But she thinks Dodd-Frank goes about it in the wrong way
yeah,
for
but
other
it,
things.
But she Trump's not talking about replacing it, regulations.
Well,
he's
that's
just,
exactly what I was going to say. If
all
he
the
had
regulations.
Said, you know, this is wrong for the following 5 reasons, and so instead of this, we're going to fix it to do this so that capital is freed up so that these people can create jobs.
No, that's more thought and intelligence than Donald Trump has ever actually put into it right there in those 5 seconds. So
right.
don't expect that.
I don't, and that's not what he said. And he doesn't have a plan to replace it. He just wants to get rid of it. And to the point, like, is it five now? People
five
from
what?
Goldman Sachs?
9, I thought.
Oh, no, it's 9?
Yeah.
People from Goldman Sachs worked for his administration. So,
right.
You know, it's becoming very clear that, boy, Hillary Clinton's ties to Wall Street were awful, weren't they?
She gave speeches, don't you know?
She gave speeches to them. It's like, I have to laugh, otherwise I scream into the oblivion or cry. So, you know, it's just a new nightmare every day. I don't even know what we're doing. And, you know, so...
So
are we done
that.
With that topic?
Sure. Then there was his latest round of tweets. I think there was a tweet, I thought it was this morning or maybe last night, that said, all the protesters are anarchists and thugs.
Yeah.
Essentially is what it said. I don't remember what it said.
Leftist anarchists and thugs. Leftist anarchists.
Which proves that all the people that voted for me were right or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if your parents were calling to call you an anarchist thug or... Because they got really bent out of shape about the whole deplorable thing, remember? I mean, they just lost their goddamn
mind.
Oh,
yeah, they did. They were really upset.
So I guess you should be equally upset because Cheeto Man called you a... it's like it doesn't even faze you because
No.
Yeah.
I don't care. I, like, he already, it, I, no, I don't care. Okay. Sounds good. Now, do you have some background on the stuff that happened at UC Berkeley?
I know very little about it. I know it was Milo Yiannopoulos mm-hmm. was going to speak there and did speak there. And then there was some physical altercations or something.
There was a riot, essentially. I mean,
good.
There was a protest, but there was also like some violence and it didn't need to go that way, I don't think.
Okay, I don't know the details. But
I also understand the gross frustration of a bunch of college kids who just voted, probably some of them for the first time, mm-hmm. and Donald Trump's the president, and they're on one of the more liberal campuses in the country, and this piece of shit, woman-hating, misogynistic, racist.
No, but it's okay because he's gay, right?
Ugh, get me fucking started.
Or supposedly he's gay. I who knows?
Oh yeah, he definitely is. Okay. Was going to come speak on their campus,
right?
And they were upset. There was petitions and like, don't let him do it, and blah blah blah. Look, I don't like it when protests get violent. I'm with MLK Jr.,
mm-hmm.
but I also don't think that we can be blind to the idea that people get desperate and people get yes. so fucking pissed and we feel so unheard.
Yes.
That, you know what? Like, no, the violence wasn't directed at people. It was directed at buildings and property. And coming from the environmental movement, idea, like the Greenpeace sort of ideology is like mm-hmm. property destruction is vandalism, not violence.
Right.
Violence hurts people.
Right.
Vandalism hurts property.
Right.
So I don't know all the details of everything that happened. I wish it hadn't gone that way. Somebody I follow on Facebook was saying it's best to just hear them out. Because when you listen to the enemy talk, they'll tell you their plan. Mm-hmm. And then you know how to resist. Mm-hmm. I think that's good advice. I also think it's a very white male privileged perspective.
Yeah.
And it comes from white male liberal. And it's, yeah, that's good and fine. But I think this is a little personal for me. And I'm going to tell you a story. About why this upsets me. I think that that's true, and I agree with him, but I've had a lot of white men in my life recently try to talk to me about protesting.
Mm, yes.
And try to tell me all about...
That you're protesting wrong?
How I'm protesting wrong. Not just me. Me and the 3 million women who protested, women and men, and people of all gender identities. Mm-hmm. Protested at the women's marches across the country. This one particular guy really set me off. So he was just very kindly explaining to me how liberal he was and how much of a feminist he was.
Right.
And then in the same breath said, but this whole protesting women's march thing, you guys just completely did it wrong. I'm sorry, excuse me. Well, you know, like, it's just this and it's that. And like, you know, he's like, there was so much criticism of the women's march because the cops were like nice and wearing the like pink pussy hats and you know, posing for photos with old white ladies, grandmas. And I was like, okay. And he's like, you know, when the black people protest and it gets violent, you just want to say to them, like, well, I'm sorry, but you don't get to be pissed. Like, maybe you should get some white grandmas to come out. And I'm like, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
You, doughy, rich, white dude from Connecticut, would like to instruct black people how to fight their own oppression.
Right.
That because you have ever fought and you've ever experienced oppression in the first place, particularly
let alone had to fight
systemic
it.
Oppression that the Black community has gone through for the entire history of their presence in this country.
Yes.
But yes, you, doughy white fucking 35-year-old, should tell them all about how they're doing it wrong. And if they just had some white grandmas to pose with some cops, everything would be fucking fine. Like, don't talk to me about how to resist oppression when you've never fucking experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
It is unbelievably frustrating and maddening. And we had a very, it felt like an eternity, and it had been like 36 minutes conversation. And it was hard. It was rough. And I've been, that was my first taste of it. And then, because this was like right after the Women's March, like maybe the next like day or two after. And then I've been seeing it all over the place. I've been hearing it from friends and acquaintances and of these white dudes just being like, well, if you just listen to me, then your protest would go better. And I'm like, I feel like our protest went pretty fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the next time you get 500,000 people to come march in Washington, D.C., you can talk to me about how to put a protest together.
Or 175,000 in Denver when we expected 20.
Yeah. I don't feel like I really need... It's not like we had a failed protest. It's like, I want to explain to them, like, what help do you think exactly I need? This was the, like, largest protest in American history across the country and across the world on every single continent. But you have some really great advice about how we fucked it up and we could do better? Like, all right, white dudes, go out and march. I want to see it. I want to see how you know everything. Fuck it. Get on your little white dude network and get your Pepe the Frog suits out or whatever it is that you guys give a shit about and go show me how to protest. Go show me how to bring more than 3 million people in the United States and people on every continent to come out for a cause.
Well,
with a message and a unified vision. Go show me how to do a better job than we
did. I thought they were going to do the MRA march in the fall. Right? Were they going to do that?
Yes.
They were going to meet at the Science Museum or at the bike rack and nobody showed up?
Yeah. I know there's a news story about that. If you guys want to email us, we'll cover it next week. I know that it epically failed, and I think it was for multitudes of reasons, like probably no one cares, and also I think they didn't get permits or something, but it was like four guys anyway, so.
Wasn't that like the, I remember there was big talk of the trucker protest of Obama. All the truck drivers were going to encircle the Beltway in D.C. and block all the traffic, and then they were going to arrest Obama.
Oh, good.
And it was like 30 trucks in total showed up. They said it was going to be 30,000.
Oh, wow. And it was I don't remember that at all. That's funny. I don't remember that at all.
It wasn't very memorable. That's why.
Well, yeah, right. So that's a thing that's been happening. If you guys out there, ladies in particular, anybody, I guess, but particularly the ladies, have stories about men that you know that are trying to, or people of color out there who maybe have previously experienced this with the Black Lives Matter movement, have stories of being mansplained or white-splained, how to...
Or man-white-splained, which is usually the case.
Usually the case, let's be fair.
Yeah.
How to resist your own oppression. I would love to hear them because it is like, it's like this thing that just keeps coming up for me all over the place. After it happened, I'm just noticing it everywhere.
Yeah, it just happened to a friend of mine the other night. Yeah, same story, basically.
We were just talking about it. Like, exactly the same thing happened to her. And I'm like, I was ready to punch this guy in the face.
And she was too, yeah.
Yeah, so email me if you want any stories that you have about that. We'll keep an ongoing list of white mansplaining about protests. Okay. What's next?
Well, is it that part of the night where we get to predictions and how long can this possibly go on and what the hell is going to happen next? Because I think I talked about this last show a little bit, but we haven't even really gotten to the good stuff yet. I mean, when we're going to default on the debt and, you know, not honor our obligations with NATO. And like when things really start to unravel, depending on how complicit Congress decides to be and if Trump is still in power. But assuming just everything keeps rolling along and assuming the Republican Congress now has a president to sign off on all the crazy shit that they wanted to do or purported to want to do against Obama. I mean, we haven't got to ACA being unraveled yet. And so getting 20 million people kicked off their insurance, that's coming in some way, shape or form.
I don't know. Since the repeal has been possible, I just saw a poll chart science thing that you'd be able to tell me is valid or not, that said Obamacare is more popular now than it ever has been.
Well, sure.
Now that the possibility of it being repealed, people are starting to understand what that means.
Okay, but okay. And we know that our Democratic Congress people are their phones are ringing off the hook.
Yes. And our Republicans, by the way. Call the Republicans too.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Do we think that the Republicans in the House and the Senate are getting calls from their constituents saying, do not repeal ACA?
Yeah, no, I know they are. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't
absolutely
know.
They're, this is not...
I'm not so sure about that, Rachel.
No, it's true. There's stories all over the place.
They have campaigned and run out of fear of being primaried for not wanting to repeal Obamacare.
That's
hard
because
enough.
It wasn't possible and everyone knew it. It was a way to say, I hate Barack Obama.
Right.
Now we're talking about my actual health care as a Republican voter. Before it was, I want to tell you how much I hate
Obama.
Are they
that naive
you better
and short-sighted?
Prove how much you hate Obama. Now it's, don't fucking take my health care, motherfucker. That's bullshit. No.
Yeah, I didn't know Obamacare was AC. I don't know they were the same thing, even.
I don't think that's even, I think that's...
Mostly a red herring?
Mostly a red herring. Yeah. I think it's mostly like... We needed you to keep doing that because we needed to tell the black guy we hated him.
Right.
Now we're talking about my actual health care, and you can't take that away. My husband's fucking dying. Like, right. Don't take it.
Right.
I also call Cory fucking Gardner every day and talk to him about ACA because I need him to understand that while I'm a Democratic voter, which they're aware of, I am his constituent.
Mm-hmm.
And I... want him to do right by, like, sometimes I think people forget two things. One, they work for us, and two, even if you didn't vote for them, they still fucking work for you.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if you're a member of their party. Call them anyway. Mm-hmm. Call them and yell at them and tell them how you feel and tell them for sure you're not voting for them next year and you're going to actively campaign against them and you're going to call all your friends and all your friends are going to call them and, like, you're not talking to Cory fucking Gardner. You're talking to Jeff Chad. But, like, they have to keep a record of that. And they have a tally that they give. And, you know, it matters. And the other thing I would say is, like, show up if you can. That's been really effective for Cory Gardner. People showing up to his office in groups and trying to get a minute with him. That's not you being demanding. That's, like, scheduling... an annual review for your employee.
Right.
Right. So showing up to his office, like, it's like if you employed somebody and they fucked up, right? Like a lot. And you were like, hey, we need to have a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just like left out the back door and then they turned their phone off and then they pretended they didn't get their email.
Right.
And they broke their computer. And then you were like, look, you called their wife and you're like, look, I need to have a conversation with this person mm-hmm. or it's over.
Right.
And then they were like, all right. And then they're like, well, you're just a paid actor. You're not really my boss. You're just an imposter or something. I mean, it's absurd, right?
Yeah.
So you're not asking for anything that you don't deserve when you show up to their office.
No, absolutely.
You are saying, look, I'm a person. You're not in charge. This is a representative democracy. So I elect you to represent me and my interests. And you're not doing that right now. And I would like to have a conversation with you about it. Don't be an asshole. Don't throw things. Don't say bad words. I have a hard time. I don't. I'm fine. But like, don't say bad words. Like, just be respectful. But just be really like, this is how I feel. And I want you to understand my family's story. If you can get in. If you can bring a group of 5 or 6 people that can all take together 10 minutes of the senator's time, much more likely to happen. If you get turned down, I would encourage you to contact your local press, right? Not the New York Times, but like your local paper, your local TV news station, like the little guys who are looking for a story.
Right.
Contact them and say, look, we've tried multiple times. He seems to be backing out, or he's ignoring us, or his phone lines are full, or no one's answering. I haven't gotten a response. The media loves that kind of stuff, and it puts pressure on these people. So Democrat or Republican, contact them by phone. If you can possibly make it into their office, fucking do it. And if you try and fail multiple times, contact the news. Keep them accountable.
Well, let's talk about what we are going to be calling our representatives about next. And Okay. Everybody's calling right now, obviously, about the Muslim ban.
Yes.
And the courts seem to be on our side. And
yes.
You know, I don't know what's going to happen with that. It's already been a horrible humiliation for not only this administration, but for this country.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know where that's going, but, you know, what's next? ACA repeal is on the table.
It is.
And we're going to get to that.
It's working, the calls on that. What we'll get to later as predictive, we can get to, but what we should be calling about right now, other than the Muslim ban, is the confirmation of Betsy DeVos, the
yes.
confirmation of Jeff Sessions. Those are the two for me that are the most, I mean, they're all awful. Tom Price, like, they're all horrific in their own right. But Jeff Sessions and Betsy DeVos for me are the, I think, only two that we have any chance of stopping, although we probably won't. The only way that we have
DeVos a little better chance. Sessions will get confirmed.
Right. We just need two more Republicans. Two have already said yes. They're going to vote no. We just need two more. And there's some, like, put enough pressure on somebody, they'll do what you want them to do. So make some calls. Going beyond that, I don't know. Like, there's state politics stuff happening everywhere because it seems like a free-for-all now that Trump's the president. So if you live in a red state, I would watch really carefully what's going on. The state of Arkansas House just passed a law that would allow the family of a woman to sue her to either block her having an abortion or sue her if she has an abortion.
So what family members exactly?
Well, the father.
Okay.
Whether he's, you know, a rapist. So if a rapist, so there's like a reporting requirement to tell the father that you're going to have an abortion.
Right.
And he can sue to block it.
Right.
Regardless of the circumstances of right. how you got pregnant.
Yeah, whether he divorced you, whether he ran off with a secretary, whether
He raped you. Whether it's a product of incest and you're 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, women can be forced to have abortions in Arkansas if this goes through the Senate and is signed by the governor. And it's Arkansas, so I have no reason to believe that wouldn't happen. So reproductive rights are very much under attack on the state level right now. They're on attack on a federal level, but much less than on a state level. So if that's something that's important to you, watch that and call your local reps.
Yes.
Your local reps are the most accessible people
Absolutely
in
they
government.
Are.
They literally, like, they'll take your phone call. They will personally read your email. You can get their cell phone number in a lot of cases. Like, these are very, very accessible people who need, you know, they win by a few hundred votes.
Yeah.
Sometimes
literally.
Less than that. So literally. If they've got 1,000 people calling them about something,
That matters
so much more than 100,000 people calling
a senator
or a million people signing some bullshit petition for Trump. Like
right.
calling your local reps and being like, this is bullshit. And if you don't stand up for it, I will just vote against you. They're like, oh shit. Like, I'm telling you, I've worked for these people. They are highly accessible and really tuned into their local communities and really wanting to, if they're good, really wanting to reflect the values of their communities, and if they're ideologues, very easy to vote out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up in Arkansas. I didn't know that, and I had not been paying much attention to state politics.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, you're right. With people sort of taking their eye off the ball, this is a chance to ram controversial stuff through.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this, like, shock and awe politics. If Trump does something crazy, you know, and they did it at, like, 2 in the morning on a Thursday.
Sure. Yeah.
And so nobody knows. And then some savvy Arkansas news organization picked it up. And, you know, I mean, you really have to be aware.
Texas legislature is really keen at doing stuff like that as well.
Yeah. Oh, they, I mean, yeah, it's a tactic for sure. Especially something, or like attaching it to some really benign sounding bill as an amendment that nobody notices for a couple weeks. And by then it's done. Like, keep a hold of, state papers. And, I know local, like, TV news is mostly garbage.
Yes.
But most communities have a couple, one or two good, you know, newspapers or publications that follow, specifically that follow local politics. In Colorado, I would recommend the Colorado Statesman. That's the one that really is obsessed with Colorado politics from a local level. And they do a fantastic job of covering it. And they do, that's all they do. So there's got to be one in your state, and follow that stuff. I mean, that's the stuff that's going to directly impact you, particularly under a Trump presidency, when so many states are going to be one way or the other, right? Like, Colorado's actively doing things to resist Trump and to make state laws that sort of put us in a bubble away from Trump's America.
And that's with a divided state house, by the way.
No. Colorado has a blue house, blue Senate, and blue governor.
Oh, I thought the house was still red.
No, the house has always been blue. The Senate was red. We turned it blue, and now we have...
well, thank God for that. And that just shows what
blue
a huge
governor.
What a huge difference that makes. We can
elections matter.
Ourselves on
elections
the local level.
Elections matter on the local level.
Local and state level.
Like, we're going to be insulated inside a little Colorado bubble from Trump's America.
From a lot of it. Not all of it.
No,
from
of
a
course
lot of
not.
It.
But... you know, like, I don't know if we talked about this or if I just told you, but they passed, Leslie Herod and Jonathan Singer just proposed and was passed through the Colorado State House a bill that protects the reproductive rights of women in Colorado,
right,
regardless of what the federal government does,
right,
with reproductive rights. Now, we can fight that in court forever, but that's a state law. We can argue the 10th Amendment. We can do all kinds of things. But I voted for Democrats, as did all of Colorado, most of a majority of Colorado. Mm-hmm. And because of that, my state House members are taking steps to try to insulate me from the policies of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so it matters. It matters who your state reps are. It matters who your state senators are. It matters who your governor is, your mayors, your city council people. It matters. And maybe this election will finally drill that into people's heads. I don't know.
I wouldn't hold
I don't
my
know,
breath.
But it fucking matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we got a few minutes left.
Is there anything fun to talk about? Have we done anything fun? Are we going to do anything fun? Is anything worth...
A couple weeks ago, we had a whole fun segment that killed, like, the whole...
Star Wars.
We talked about Star Wars.
Oh, we watched Hidden Figures. I don't want to give spoilers, but...
Oh, okay.
Watch
we can
fucking
do a little
that
movie.
Movie.
We can do a little movie review. Let's do a little 10-minute movie review here to close it out.
All right. Hidden Figures is the movie about the... It's a true story. Well, it's based on a true story, right? Obviously, the dialogue is fictionalized, because who knows what they said in the room, but it's about... these women of color, these black women who worked for NASA.
On the Mercury missions.
On the Mercury missions. And not, like, as secretaries.
No.
Like,
As
statisticians and mathematicians and like, field guiders. And I don't know what their titles
computer
were.
Computer programmers. Eventually.
I mean, it was just, yeah, computer programmers, which is so interesting. Okay, so first of all, the movie was... absolutely incredible. I had zero things bad to say about it. no nitpicks. I thought it was going to be sappy.
Yeah, some of it kind of was.
No. No, it could have gone so overboard.
It could have, sure.
And instead, it really treated each character as like a three-dimensional human being the way that you would, let's say, a white man in most movies.
Well, it covered some really important key topics. They were working out of Virginia, which is still a segregated state in 1961.
Yes.
Very conservative, you know, deep south.
Yeah.
And these women, they still were having to use different bathrooms and
like the building this one woman worked in. By the way, spoilers, just spoilers. She was the first black woman to work in this particular building of NASA because they had never considered that a black woman could, or black person could, do what she did. But she was a brilliant mathematician, and when she came in, there was just no colored restroom there, so she walked a half a mile. Usually ran in high heels with her work, sometimes in the rain.
The true story of that is cooler, though, and I'll tell you in a second.
Okay.
Because I looked it up.
To a different building where she used to work, where there was a colored women's bathroom, and peed there several times a day. And it's really interesting. So it's an ongoing theme throughout the movie, and I loved that it was. And Dana was telling me that he read a review from the New York Times where this old white dude bitched about the regularity with which they showed it in the movie. And I was like, that's the point. She had to do that multiple times a day, every single day. The point of them showing her do it five or six times throughout a two-hour movie is to exhaust you.
Yeah.
So that you understand how fucking exhausting it must have been for her.
Yeah. Now, let me clarify one thing.
Yeah.
I undoubtedly, there were people, maybe even that worked in NASA, that had to go through that. But that actual woman in real life,
yeah,
she would have had to walk a half mile to the colored bathroom. But in real life, she just said, oh, no, fuck it. I'm using this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No dramatic gesture by Kevin Costner necessary?
No, no.
Okay.
Which I think is cooler. And that you know, that, like, yeah, I could see a woman like that just saying, the hell with this. I'm not.
I have work to do.
Yeah.
I have serious work to do to.
Yeah, go ahead and call the cops.
I'm going to pee because I literally need to go back and make something go to space with the man in it.
Yeah.
So fuck you.
Yeah.
But it was a really.
And the actual woman, that actual person got to meet President Obama. And
really?
Yeah.
Oh, she lived that long? Things.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I think she's still alive.
Wow.
Or she just died very recently. I think she might still be alive.
Well, it was just, it was just incredible. I cried like three times, but.
It was a very good movie.
It wasn't sappy. It wasn't, I don't think it followed I sort of thought it was going to be like a Spielberg style, like, formulaically historical drama.
Uh-huh.
And not that there was any, like, what a twist or anything, but there was just, it just didn't follow exactly what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be that sort of formulaic, sappy thing. And mm-hmm. It wasn't. The characters were, like I said, like, these were real people. And
they were very fleshed out.
Very fleshed out, very three-dimensional, very, like, their personal lives were involved. And that was the other thing this fucking white dude from the New York Times said. He was like, they didn't focus enough on the astronauts and they focused too much on their personal lives.
Okay.
Or not enough on their personal lives. Oh my God.
There's a 3-hour movie about the Mercury missions that we just watched called The Right Stuff.
That's right.
It's a very good movie.
And it's literally, okay, how many movies are there about astronauts? Let's just count them. This is not only a story that I've never seen in a movie. This is not
a story an historical
fact that I was ever taught, that I've ever read in a book, that I have ever known in my life.
Yeah.
When we talk about the importance of history and teaching diversity, and you know what? It's Black History Month, so I'm glad mm-hmm. we're talking about this. Mm-hmm. When people throw their arms up and say, why do we need a Black History Month? Why do we need to do this? This is why.
This is why.
Travis is the biggest space nerd I've ever met in my entire life. You're obsessed with space and astronauts and the stars and NASA. and all of the history
of
it.
I didn't know any of this.
And you had no fucking clue that a bunch of black ladies made it possible.
Nope.
No clue.
Nope.
And you have studied it extensively.
Yeah, because it's not in any of the history books. And that's it wasn't right. on any of the documentaries.
No.
And it wasn't in Apollo 13. And it wasn't yep. in the right stuff. And
it wasn't in history. It wasn't taught. It wasn't. It's not a thing that people knew. And that's important for so many reasons, but particularly for representation is important. There was this kid sitting next to me during the movie, and I didn't know she was there because she must have come in, you know, after the preview started or something, and Travis and I were in a conversation. And at the end of the movie, I was thinking throughout, like, this movie is so fucking important.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, I look over and I see this kid, and she's this little girl, and she's a black girl, and her face at the end of this movie, she looked like, I don't even know, like she'd had an epiphany, and she was so happy, and she just looked like the happiest kid I've ever seen, and like, it made me cry. I was like, that's... Not only do we have to tell girls, you can be smart.
Yeah.
These are not women who supported men. These are women who figured out complex mathematical problems that helped us get a man into space.
Mm-hmm.
They did the math. They did the science. They did the computing. They did the work. This isn't, oh, he had such a great wife, or his secretary was so helpful. These are the women who were so fucking smart, right?
Mm-hmm.
At one point, one of them says, like, somebody asks her, like, well, you know, of course you can go to school to be an engineer. If you were a white man, would you be an engineer or whatever? And she's
now,
like...
Now, to be fair, the engineers and mathematicians in history typically get overlooked anyway. They're just depicted in the movies as nerds or weirdos or, you know, comic relief.
Sure. And that sucks. And we should give scientists more.
But in those...
But the
in
fact
those,
that it in was those, in the 60s and yes. it's black women...
Oh, yeah. And in the movie adaptations, even the nerds, there's no black women among them.
It's, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for representation, it's just incredibly important to show women and young girls, and particularly young women of color,
mm-hmm.
you can be a scientist. You can work at NASA. You can be literally anything. And you are not smart. And you... You know, it's just cultural messaging is important, and we don't do enough of it. And this movie was incredibly powerful, I think, to that end.
Well, on that note, on that uplifting note, we will leave you. we will be back next week, perhaps with a guest, perhaps not. Oh, tomorrow.
Oh, shit. We're going to be on Hopping Mad. Tomorrow, we're going to record. They don't release till Monday, but we're going to be
on a round table.
On a round table with we don't know who yet. But definitely Will and Arliss, and me and Travis will be there rehashing a bunch of this, probably. But whatever they want to talk about, we're happy to chime in on. So listen to Hopping Mad on Monday on Netroots Radio. And also, if you don't catch it on Monday morning, it's available on anywhere you get podcasts.
She's got their own website. I'mhoppingmad.com.
Yeah, I'mhoppingmad.com. Yeah.
Okay. So thank you for sticking around. Check us out on Hopping Mad if you just can't get enough of our lovely voices. I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Stay active. Stay tuned. Stay involved. Stay sane if you can. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye.